Well, hey, Mosaic. How are you? It's good to see your faces. There's a lot of people in here. By the way, if you're looking for seats, there's some seats up here to the front right. If you need them, there you go. Yep. Well, hey, welcome. Welcome to Mosaic. If you're a guest and you're wondering who the heck I am, my name's Aaron, and I'm one of the pastors here. And I want to introduce to you a very good friend of mine, a guy by the name of Mike Chaplin. And Mike has been a godsend. When we were getting ready to plant this church, I have to tell you, one of the big things that we were praying about as a team in the months leading up was that God would send us gray hair. Not like give us gray hair, which he has done some of that, but they would send us people that were older and wiser and further down the road, because we knew that we were going to be a young church. I got a young pastor, just naturally going to be a pretty young church. Our launch team was mostly young families. And so we were praying that God would just send us those people that are young at heart, that very much align with the vision, the values of Mosaic. And Mike has been one of those guys, and he's been very much kind of in this kind of sage role, I'd say, because behind every pastor, especially every young pastor, there's always a number of men and women, a handful, that act as kind of spiritual guides and friends who give you a good kick in the mouth every once in a while when you need it. And Mike has been that for me. And I asked Mike this week to share with us a bit of his story. One of the things that happened when we started this series in Ruth, the very first week we were talking a lot about suffering and loss and frustration and disappointment with God. And I have to tell you, as we talked about that, the response was pretty overwhelming, especially in our life groups, but also through emails and Facebook's messages of people that are going through very hard seasons right now, or people who are just coming out of very hard seasons. And so I asked Mike, it seemed like a very timely time for him to share with us some of his own story, because he's been through a lot. And I didn't realize when I asked him this, but this is the first time that he's ever shared his story publicly in a space like this, which takes a lot of courage, and I'm sorry for throwing you under the bus. that was not intentional, but he's graciously and courageously been willing to do that. So anyway, that being said, if you would, give a warm Mosaic welcome to my good friend, Mike Chaplin.
I don't need that. Well, thank you, Aaron. That was a lot better than the first service. First service, he just got up here and said, hey, we have an old guy going to talk this morning, so sit back and enjoy it. But that was a little bit better. It's a nice way to say that I'm an old guy. But I've earned all these gray hairs. I have daughters. And I know that with Aaron having daughters, that he will earn many gray hairs as well, because it just happens. But I got to be honest with you this morning. When Aaron asked me if I would share this part of my life with you, I've been asked to do it before, and at the last minute, I've always backed out. Because normally, if I get a chance to be up here, you know, I really like to preach, and I like to be able to, you know, just talk about somebody else's life other than mine, because it's just easier. And as late as yesterday morning, I mean, I still had that standby ready to go, because I didn't know if I really wanted to do this or not. And then as I prayed about it, I really thought about, you know, this book of Ruth that we've been working through, and how this story relates to so many people, because it's real. It's a real story, and it's about relationships and how relationships sometimes don't work out like you want them to. And as I got to thinking about, you know, just all the stories in the Old Testament that I love them, but the reason that I love them is because they are real. They're unfiltered. There's all the good, the bad, and the ugly. It's all there. And I just got to thinking about how, you know, embarrassing it must be sometimes for those people to, you know, to think, oh man, David's like, oh, I can't believe they're preaching about Bathsheba again. You know, can't they talk about, you know, me being a man of God or something like that, instead of this story that I just would like to forget about? And or how would you like to be Zacchaeus And, you know, in heaven, when we get to heaven, everybody is going to say, hey, look, here's Zacchaeus, the wee little man. The wee little man was he. You know, where's the sycamore tree, Zacchaeus? You know, there's going to be all kinds of things that he's going to have to put up with because we've heard that story and we relate that to him. But yet, all those things about Zacchaeus that are real. And so I really want to try and be real with you this morning. And I'm just sharing that because it's really hard. But at the same time, I also want to say that, man, I have had a good life. And, yeah, I've had some hard times that we're going to talk about this morning. But I tell you what, I have met so many people, and some of them are here this morning, who really, I feel almost embarrassed to talk to you about this. Because, man, they could just really lay out a story for you. But I want you to know that the reality of this story all started with a phone call. And we talked about that, and maybe you got to share some of those phone calls that you hate to get. But about 12 years ago, I got a phone call from a lady, and she told me, she said, I just thought you might want to know that your wife's been driving into our neighborhood, and she parks her car in front of our house, and then she gets in another car with a guy. And I just thought you'd want to know that. And of course, I'm like, well, who is this? Never mind who I am. I just thought you wanted to know that. And so that phone call began this process of finding out what was going on. And one of my first calls was to the minister at my church. And I talked to him, and he said, Mike, that guy in the little blue car was me. And that conversation started a process of downhill for me spiritually that I can't really even describe to you. Because over a 3-year period of going to him and confronting him and saying, hey, you know, this needs to stop. And then a year later, finding out that it hasn't stopped, that it's still going on, and confronting him again. And I was trying to do what the Bible teaches and to go to him myself and then take someone with me and go to him and confront him. And so I took the associate minister with me, and the two of us sat down with him. And, oh, we were guaranteed that, oh, yeah, it's done. No problem. You don't have to worry about it ever again. And then to find out a year later that no, it was not done, that it was even worse than I had thought. And I didn't know what to do. It just, my whole life was blown up. And during that 3-year period, you know, you have to kind of understand that this is my home church. It was the church that I had grown up in. It was the church that I started out in the nursery and had become an elder in that church. And I was there, and I was the leader, and I loved the people there, and I knew that if this got out, what would happen? And man, I struggled with it, and I just became dead. I stepped out of being an elder, and I didn't want to be an elder anymore. I pretty much withdrew out of everything. I'd taught youth group for years and years and years, and I pulled kind of away from that, and I just became kind of numb. And finally, when this last one happened, I was driving through Lincoln on work, and I drove past a place where there was a sign that said Christian Counseling. And I went in and I talked to the guy, because there just was nobody in that church that I could talk to without blowing the whole thing up. And I went in and he said, well, I really don't have time. I've got somebody coming. So I kind of briefly told him what was going on. He said, you need to be here. So he called that person and said, can you come a couple hours later? And we sat down and talked, and I just shared with him, you know, what had transpired and what had taken place. And he told me, he said, Mike, you have to understand, he said, the only responsibility you have at this point is to take this to the elders. And whatever happens, you need to live with it. It's out of your hands. It needs to be in their hands. And so I did. And I want to tell you something. Things got ugly really fast, because the church took sides and battle lines were drawn, and I could understand that because it was unbelievable to me too. And people attacked my family and I. And it got so bad that I became this lightning rod that it was just like, you know, I felt kind of like, you know, when Pigpen is walking around, there's this little cloud around him as he walks along. That's what I felt like. I felt like as I walked along, it was just like blowing people up all around me. And every time I turned around, there was somebody that was, you know, hammering me about something or accusing me of something. And so I just left and started going to a different church. And man, I remember that first Sunday when I was able to actually sing. And it was a very, very dark and long time and a process. And if you've ever gone through a divorce, you know what that's like. And it brings out the worst in everybody. And I don't want to paint a picture that I'm a total victim here or anything like that, because that's not the case at all. But I think the darkest time for me happened on the day that my wife at that time, when she moved out, I had told her that she needed to make a choice, and when she made that choice, it wasn't me. And I remember the night before she was going to move, I knew the next morning her family was going to show up, and they were all going to load everything that she was going to take and move it all out. And I was laying upstairs. We lived in this house that had a wide open floor plan, and there was a loft, and that's where my bedroom was. And I was laying in that bed, and I was alone in that bed, and I had been alone in that bed for quite some time. But that night, I felt completely alone and isolated, and I was struggling. Because as a guy, you know, I thought I could fix this. I thought I could fix this, and I couldn't fix it. And what I'm about to tell you is really funny if you knew me, because the therapy that I had for myself that night was to write a poem. Now, my idea of good poetry is Dr. Seuss, if that gives you any idea. I'm not a poet. And when I sat down, pulled out a piece of paper, and I decided to just write down kind of what I was feeling, I wrote down these words. I said, "How do you say goodbye to 25 years of your life? How do you say goodbye to the woman you love, your wife? How do you say goodbye to all your hopes and dreams? How do you say goodbye through tears that flow like mountain streams? Tell me, how do you say goodbye when your heart just won't let go? How do you say goodbye when all you really want to say is hello?" Now listen, if you are a country western artist, I give you permission to use that song, because I tell you, that is the ultimate country western. I mean, can't you hear that, the last couple lines there? "When all you really want to say is," gotta pause, "hello." I mean, it's a chart buster. I'm telling you, that could be it. And when I look at it now, I think it's kind of funny. But at the time, that was where my heart was at. It was like, how can I just let this all go away? And so I took that poem, and I went downstairs, and she was sleeping in that bedroom on the main floor. And I was really surprised that the door was unlocked. And I opened the door, and I walked in, and I laid that down on the bed next to her. And I went back upstairs, didn't sleep all night, got up the next morning, went to work. And I got to tell you, when I came home from work, that was just a real surreal moment. Because when you step inside that front door, you can see every room on the main floor. And I stepped inside that door, and I just stopped, and I looked, and there were all these holes where pieces of furniture had been. And I stood there and looked, and here's a hole here, and here's one here. And this is gone too. And pictures off the wall. In fact, all the family pictures were gone. And it just seemed like that house was just, if you've ever been in a totally empty space, and everything just echoes and it sounds so empty. That's what it was like. It was like there was just chunks of me that had been ripped out of there. And I stood there, and I didn't move for a long time. And I noticed in the bedroom that was off to my left, it was completely emptied out, and that was the room that she had been in, except for one thing, and there was a piece of paper wadded up laying on the floor. And I went over and I picked that up, and it was that poem. And I got to tell you, that was the breaking point for me. I took that and I wadded it back up in my fist and I walked upstairs and I just plopped down on the bed. And I had lost it. I cried harder than I have ever cried in my life. And pretty soon that crying just became anger. And I remember rolling over on my back and I had that piece of paper still in my hand. And I shook my fist at God and I said, You tell me how I got to say goodbye. Because I can't do it. And I remember just rolling back over and crying some more. And I don't know what time it was when I finally woke up. I just collapsed in exhaustion, fell asleep. But I got up and I walked downstairs and at the kitchen table, that was where I'd always read my Bible in the morning. And so my Bible's sitting there, and I sat down at the table, and I reached over, and I pulled that Bible towards me. And I just said, God, you've got to tell me something to keep me going. Because I can't do it. And it was one of them deals where you just kind of open up your Bible and let it speak to you. And I opened it up, and it opened up into Matthew to the crucifixion story of Christ. I kind of read a few verses. I didn't need to because I knew the story really well. But I got to tell you, I can't really describe what all happened there except for the fact that God was there. And what came to my mind over and over again was God simply throwing that question back to me. How do you say goodbye to your one and only son? How do you send a savior for the world who's going to be rejected, spit upon, beaten, and killed? And I got to tell you, in that moment, I understood for the first time in my life what it really, really meant when God says, I love you. And as I just let that soak in through all the pain and just really take hold of my heart, I can't tell you the transformation as he spoke those words to me that said, Mike, I did it for you so you could have hope. And like somebody drowning in the sea, I grabbed onto that. And that was what kept me going for the next day, and the next day, and the next day. And it began this process of healing. And I would never want to go through that again, but I can't tell you how amazing that was. That I'd been a Christian since I was 9 years old, but I really can honestly tell you that for the first time in my life, I understood what it meant for God to love me. And the process began there for just some healing. But I had never felt so loved before, and it just felt great. And God, just like in the story of Ruth, where God provides Boaz as a kinsman redeemer that we've been learning about. God provided people for me that I am so thankful for. There was a guy named Brian Lang who I had as a junior high sponsor when I was in junior high. And Brian knew me very well. And so I asked him if he could just hold me accountable. And so the only way he would agree to it is if I totally submitted to him and to be totally accountable to him. And we would meet on a weekly basis, and he would ask me the tough questions, and he would really hit me up and say, okay, you know, Mike, you know, what's going on here and what's going on there? And he held me accountable. And through that whole process, he nursed me along. And I remember, because he knew me, and he knew how stupid I was, and that he knew that even though I was 40-some years old, that I was still a junior high kid at heart. And so he was very careful with me. And I remember the day when he finally told me that it was, that he thought it was time that I could start dating again. Now, the stipulation was that I had to date 10 people before I could get serious with any of them. Now, for some of you college guys, that might be just a weekend. I don't know. But I tell you what, for a 40-year-old guy who's been married for 25 years, you know, 40-something, been married 25 years and surrounded by married people as friends, that was a chore, which is why he chose that. And I could tell you some funny stories about the first date that I had, and I'm not going to share it with you, but if you really want to know, you can ask me later, and it is kind of a funny story. But I began this process, and it was so hard, and it was so awkward, because, you know, you just kind of stand in the mirror, and you look at yourself and go, oh, man, I need some help here, you know? And, you know, you try and flex and do everything you can to kind of beef up your confidence, and nothing's happening, you know? It's like, oh, this is tough. And so I began that process, and I was about halfway through my list of 10, okay? Ladies, please forgive me because this part's going to sound horrible, but it's true. But I'm about halfway through the 10, and I'm at church one Sunday. I'd started going to this other church, and all of a sudden, it was one of these moments that, like what you see in the movies where you see this person and the spotlight comes on and the angels go, oh! You know, that was it. That was the moment when I spotted this maiden in the choir singing. And at that moment, and I can't explain this at all because this is just really weird, and it just sounds so funny to say it, but at that moment, I knew that that was the lady that I was going to marry. The only problem was I didn't know her name. And so I began this plan. And the plan had two parts. One is I had to get through the other five, okay, before I could even begin to think about this person. Now, that's what I say, ladies, please forgive me because I know this is horrible. I had one weekend where I checked docs 7, 8, 9, you know, bang, you know, Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday noon, you know, it was great. You know, checked off three lists. I take it to Brian, and Brian's like, man, he's had a busy week. And I'm like, yeah, I have. It's been exhausting, you know. Let alone expensive, you know, that's even worse. But I finally get the 10th punch card, and I shared with Brian. And I always kind of worry that if I tell that story that there might be somebody that knows somebody that knows somebody that I dated, that might have been 7, 8, or 9, you know, because I feel really bad now that I was just blowing people through, you know, it's terrible. But I finally got to that point, and so I had done this investigative work. That was the other part of the plan, was to find out who this person was. And so church kind of became this hunting ground for me, you know, where I was like, you know, checking out, see who she was talking to, you know, who might be able to, you know, do a little introduction or something. And the choir would always, when they'd get done singing, they'd come down and sit down, you know, and it was always full, so it was hard for them to find a seat. And so I would always make sure I was on the end of the row with an empty chair beside me, you know, and then I'd spend the whole service, you know, just praying that God would bring her to me. You know, just bring her to me, that's all I need. And so I have these empty chairs, but every old lady in the choir comes and sits there, you know. It just never worked. It was just so sad. And so I finally I thought, okay, I'm just going to have to take the plunge and I'm just going to have to call her. Yeah. And my daughter, she could tell some funny stories about how I paced around the phone. I would pick up the phone. I would hang the phone up. I'd pick up the phone. I'd hang the phone up. I was rehearsing what I was going to say. I had a script and I had it memorized and was ready to roll. And it was just agonizing. And I finally picked up the phone and I called and, hello, my name's Mike. You know, no, I'd kind of set it up a little bit better than that, but not much. And we had a few minutes of chit chat, and then I asked a question. Hey, would you like to go out sometime? And she said, no. Now you gotta understand, I knew, there was no doubt about it, I knew that this was the woman that I was going to marry. God had told me, God had appointed her, she was it. This was one of those prearranged weddings that apparently she didn't get the memo on. And she said no. But an amazing thing happened, and I'm really thankful that she said no, even though it totally shattered my confidence, because I'm like, you know, I just blew through 10 people that there might have been a good one there, you know, and I can't call them back now. It's like I've blown them off. And this whole process began where God really changed my heart. And instead of praying about that God would bring her into my life and make her part of my life, I just started praying for her. And I remember that first prayer because it was just so awkward. Because I said, God, I don't know anything about Allison, but I know that you know her. And I know that she's a single mom. And I know that single moms have lots of needs. And so I began just praying for her on a daily basis. And months passed. I mean, I had really kind of given up any hope at that point. And then it happened. I was in the checkout line at Sunmart. And I looked in aisle 3, at checkout 3, here she was. So being the cool dude that I was, I hurried up and checked out, got in my truck, and I waited for her. Yeah. So I am sitting in my truck, timing this perfectly. I didn't even know what kind of car she drove. That's how bad it was. But I'm watching for her to come out, and I tell you what, it seemed like an eternity, but she finally comes through the door, and she comes out, and she's walking towards her car, and I intercept her. Just happened to drive by. You know, it's, oh, hey, how you doing? And so she was gracious enough to talk to me for a little bit, and she agreed that maybe later that evening we could go for a walk. And so we went for a walk, and And then she came back. I lived out in the country, and she came back, and we sat out on our deck, and we talked for hours, and it was amazing, and it reaffirmed to me that, yes, Allison was the one for me. And it at least piqued enough curiosity that she wanted to get to know more about me as well. And we've been married 7 years now, and it's been a great and amazing thing. And God blessed me in a great way with a great wife. But I want you to know something, because even if it hadn't happened that way, even if I was standing up here telling you a continued sad tale of events that happened, that's not really what I want you to get out of this today. Because I tell you what makes the difference in this marriage more than anything else is that moment when God spoke to me, and for the very first time in my life, I understood that God was enough. So now that He is really the anchor in any relationship that I have with Allison, He is still the anchor. She doesn't have to be the anchor. God is that anchor. He is enough. And that's an amazing transformation that took place, and it took that pain and it took that hurt for me to figure it out. And I don't want you to have to go through that to figure it out either. That is the anchor for any relationship. And so many times when people get in a bad relationship and it all falls apart around them, they look for the answer in another relationship, and it's not there. God became that rock for me that I held on to when it was bad, and I still hold on to it today when it's good. And I know that in a group this size, there are some of you who can really relate to the good news, to the good part of that story, to the happy ending. Man, your life's wonderful. You're in a great relationship, or maybe you're not in a relationship, and that's why you're happy. But whatever the situation might be, you know, things are good, and you're feeling good, and you can relate to that. And maybe there's some of you that are in that dark part of your life right now where things hurt. And the pain is real. And I can't offer you anything except that truth, that God is that rock that you need to get through that time. And I'm thankful that I finally learned that. It's been an amazing thing. The verses that I grabbed onto that I really loved and just want to share with you now is in Lamentations chapter 3, verses 19 through 24. It says, "The thought of my suffering and homelessness is bitter beyond words. I will never forget this awful time as I grieve over my loss. Yet I still dare to hope. When I remember this, the faithful love of the Lord never ends. His mercies never cease. Great is His faithfulness. His mercies begin afresh each morning. And I say to myself, the Lord is my inheritance. Therefore, I will hope in Him." I love that verse especially where it says, "Great is His faithfulness. His mercies begin afresh every morning." Because I'd be lying to you if I said that from that moment at the kitchen table, everything was uphill from there. There were peaks and there were valleys, but God's mercies began afresh every morning. He never gave up on me when I screwed up big time, when I allowed the anger and the hurt to spew out at people. He was there, and He held on to me. Let's pray. God, much like the prayer that I had the first time I prayed with Allison, I don't know a lot of these people here. And I don't know what their needs are, and I don't know where they're at in their life. But God, I just pray that they will hear the message that you have for them today, that you're there. That even if things are dark, and even if the light just seems like it's totally gone away, that there is hope, that you are hope. And God, I pray that you will just really wrap your arms around them, that they can feel that love that only you can give, and that you'll pick them up, dust them off, and help them on down the path to recovery, God. Lord, we love you, and we're just so thankful that you gave us your Son that really demonstrated to us what real love is. Thank you. Amen.